The test is in four part, part one, part two, part three, and part four. Now look at part one.
Part one.
You will hear a woman phoning the local council about an abandoned vehicle. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 6.
Environmental Health Department, Paul speaking.
Oh, hello. I wanted to report a vehicle that's been left parked near where I live. I think it's been abandoned. I wondered if the council could arrange to get it towed away. Have I got through to the right department?
Yes, you have. If I could just take a few details. Your name, please?
Mrs. Shefford.
Thank you.
It's not my vehicle, though. I just thought someone ought to report it.
No, that's fine. What I need to do is take some details first. Then we can decide what to do about the problem.
Oh, I see.
So the next thing I need to know is your address.
Right, it's 41 Lower Green Street.
Yes?
Barrowdale. And the postcode's WH45JP.
Fine. And if I could just ask for a telephone number.
It's 01778-5523. 87. I'm out quite a lot, but you can just leave a message on the answer phone if you need to. Or I could give you my mobile number.
That's all right, don't worry. Now, could you tell me a little more about this vehicle? You say it's been abandoned.
Well, it certainly looks like it.
Can you give me an idea of where it is?
Yes, it's near the main road that goes through Barrowdale.
Is that the A69?
Yes, that's right. Now, there's the primary school just towards the end of the village, and then next to that, next to the children's playground, there's a field, and it's in there.
Oh. I wonder how it got in there.
Well, there's a gate to allow farm machinery in and out. I thought something ought to be done about it. The children from the school might start playing in the vehicle and lock themselves in or something.
Yes. You were quite right to report it. And what type of vehicle are we talking about here?
It's a van, actually. You know, the sort with just a couple of little windows at the back.
Right. You don't happen to know the make and model, do you?
Oh, yes. I went and had a look and got all the details. I thought you might need them. I'm surprised the school hasn't contacted you about it. Anyway, I wrote the details down. Right. It's a Katala. And the models are Flyer 2000.
Is that F-L-Y-E-R?
That's right.
Very good. And the colour?
Well, it's not all that easy to see because it's absolutely filthy. And actually, it looks as if it's had a paint job at some stage. It's blue, but you can just see white underneath where it's been scratched.
Right. Well, I'll just make a note of the present colour. And if you could just tell me the vehicle number. Did you make a note of that?
Oh, yes. It's S322GEC.
Okay.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 7 to 10.
And it sounds as if the general condition of the vehicle isn't too good, from what you say.
No, it's pretty poor. It wouldn't be drivable. It's got a flat tire and there's a crack in the windscreen. I reckon someone just wanted to get rid of it.
That's usually the way.
It's been there for nearly a week. No, it must be 8 days. I remember it was a Sunday morning when I noticed it. It wasn't there the day before. I walk past it most days on the way to the shops. I'd have thought the school would have reported it.
Does the field actually belong to the school?
No, it's part of Hill Farm Estate.
Right. I'll just make a note of that. And I don't suppose you have any information about who might own the vehicle?
No, I've no idea. So what will you do now?
Well, we'll come and have a look and see if we can trace the owner. And if we can't, the vehicle will be removed as rapidly as the law permits. It could be anything up to 20 days.
One thing I should say, I'm quite sure this doesn't belong to anyone round here. I'd definitely recognise it if it was from someone who lived here.
So you don't think it was anyone local? Right. I'd say at a guess we're looking at a stolen vehicle here.
I did wonder if it might have been. You hear such a lot about car thieves nowadays.
Well, we certainly will be looking into that possibility. Anyway, thank you for contacting us, Mrs. Shefford, and we'll keep you informed of what happens.
Right. Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear a student union officer explaining about the union's functions and services to a group of new university students. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 15.
Hello everyone. Now, here you all are, new university students. And the first question you probably have is, what is a student union? Another question is, do I have to join? Well, regarding this second question, let me say that membership used to be compulsory in the past, but that did cause some controversy, particularly from students who wanted to remain free and unaffiliated, and this university responded. So, joining up is no longer compulsory. It's totally up to you, although I'll admit there is a fairly strong obligation to join, since all students benefit from the large variety of services that we offer. We do understand, however, that many might be unwilling to join because of a supposed political slant to the union. Traditionally, student unions have been seen as being dominated by the left, and I suppose that's still true to a large extent. Here, however, at this university, our union discourages such one-sided viewpoints, and students across the whole political spectrum are welcome. Thus, if you feel that you are a conservative type, in other words, leaning to the right, you are particularly urged to join to provide a more balanced representation. Now, let me move back to the first question. What are we? We are a formal organisation, but totally independent of the educational body. We make our own rules, rent our own premises, and organise ourselves as we wish. And our mission is basically to help you. For example, Do you remember how you all arrived in late February to have an orientation week? That gave you an invaluable induction into life here, right? Well, the student union organized all the festivities at the end of that. The barbecues, partying and drinking, and even the musical entertainment as well. We'll do that again on occasions, and as always, those events take place on the football ground. Now, do you have any questions before I move on?
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
Now, let me tell you more about the student union and its basic functions. In general, there are three: social, organisational and representational. Let's look at the first one. Basically, the union provides many social outlets for you to relax and have a better life at university. If you go to our union office, you'll find a list of the many clubs and societies we have, where you can make many friends with people who share a common interest. So, after class, sit with them in the cafeteria and discuss whatever takes your fancy. We also maintain sporting facilities and even our own gym, allowing you to relieve some of that pressure and worry after a particularly hard session in the classroom. And we have some small shops and other places where you can buy clothes and sporting gear, in other words, some retail outlets. And if you flash your student union card, you'll get up to 20% discount at the bookshop. But unfortunately, there are no discounts at the union cafeteria. Sorry, no cheap cappuccinos. Finally, there's a student union newspaper, and you're welcome to contribute or put in advertisements if you're buying and selling goods or textbooks. You can also place notices of a more personal nature on the notice board of the union office itself. All right, let's move on to our more serious functions, which are helping you get through life here, as well as representing you in times of trouble. Regarding the second issue, if you have a problem or a grievance, or if you feel under pressure or depressed for reasons both inside and outside the university, for example, perhaps a dispute with your landlord or the people in your local gym, then come to us. We have a range of counsellors and helpers, and even some lawyers, who you can meet in the conference room. So, just sip a cup of tea or coffee with them and tell them your troubles, and they'll be all ears. Basically, there's every reason to join the student union, since whatever you need, whether it be social or representational, we will help you.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part three.
Part three.
You'll hear two university students discussing a social science lecture they attended. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
Did you go to the first social science lecture yesterday?
Yeah. Didn't you see me there?
No. I was trying so hard to understand the lecturer.
What didn't you understand?
A lot of it, really. For example, he said we needed to study history as part of the course, but I didn't get why.
You probably missed it. He said early on that we need to learn from our past mistakes.
Right. But he also said we need to put ourselves in the place of our ancestors. Why is that?
I think the point is that it's not enough to know how they lived and what they did. We need to know what they thought.
I see. And I've written transferable skills in my notes next, but I have no idea what that means.
If you study social science, you learn skills that you can use in a job.
Oh, right. Is that all? Okay, but why is that?
The point he made was that in studying social science, you use a flexible and adaptable approach to learning.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
He also kept mentioning all the other subjects we will need to study as part of the course. I didn't write them all down, did you?
Some of them. I think I can make sense of my notes. The first one was anthropology, which he said would cover prehistory and archaeology as well.
Okay.
Then there's economics. I wrote down that this was not meant to mean that we will spend all our time looking at economic theory, but more that we need to see how humans behave.
That's good. I don't think I could handle economic theory. He said something about education too, didn't he?
Yeah. He said we'll be looking at how cultural information is handed down from one generation to the next through teaching children.
He said we'd be focusing on geography, too, but I can't really remember which aspects, can you?
I noted it down, I think. Here we are, yes, particularly in relation to urban planning. It's law that I got confused about. I didn't understand why he linked that to economics.
I think he meant that laws affect the way wealth is distributed.
That makes sense. Now, what are the science wars?
Okay, I did get that. The science wars are about how social science collects information. In sociology and social work, and in social science generally, they can only study patterns of behavior and observe. If you compare that to the way scientists work in physics or chemistry, it's very different because they use specific experiments that can be tested and which give concrete answers. Social studies is often accused of being unscientific. That's all.
Okay. But it still looks like a good course, doesn't it? You don't have any regrets, do you?
None at all. I'm looking forward to it.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part 4.
Part 4.
You are going to hear a lecture on ecology. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 35. Now listen to the tape and answer the questions.
Good afternoon. I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Carey, who will talk about the program in restoration ecology.
Thanks, Chris. A lot of people think that human beings can do whatever they want to the environment. But as Aldo Leopold taught, land is a system of interdependent parts which should be regarded as a community and not a commodity. Well, that idea has influenced what we teach here in our program, where students come from all over the world to learn about restoring native plant communities back into an ecologically natural state. This field is therefore a combination of formal science with practical applications, and that is quite attractive to many people. We have students, for example, from many different nations who come just to take part in this unique program. Our location is also quite unique. We have the world's oldest restored native plant community in Curtis Prairie at the Wisconsin Arboretum. Some say that this is proof that the science of restoration ecology was birthed in Wisconsin. Well, that may be oversimplified, but our reputation is strong. But students don't have to study prairies only. One student, Edmund Mukala, from the Congo, came to study restoring ancient wetlands in the Congo using knowledge gained from historic samples of the soil seed bank. Not all the seeds survived, but some can remain dormant for many years. Mr. Mukala wanted to find out what type of community would be most similar to that ancient seed bank. He has recently returned to the Congo and is now cooperating with the government to implement his findings.
Now look at questions 36 to 40. As the talk continues, answer questions 36 to 40.
So the only prerequisite for doing research here is that it is a native plant community. That means not just prairies, but wetlands, woodlands, savannas, and other environments. We're proud of the diversity of research topics in our program. And we continue to grow. This year we have 32 new students from 8 different countries. When students first arrive, they begin rigid coursework in statistics, ecology, plant identification, and the theory of landscape change. Then they take part in internships at local conservation agencies such as the Arboretum, the Nature Conservancy, the Parks Department, and others. We find internships to be crucial in helping students apply the knowledge they have gained in the classroom. And we're proud to say that, since the beginning, we have graduated 277 students with master degrees from our programs and 122 students with PhDs. Some have gone on to bigger and better things. One graduate is now the director of the Worldwide Fund for Nature in China. Another is the director of Parks Development in California. And others now lead their own research departments in universities around the world.
That is the end of part 4.